here. Guys, I'm really excited about this. We're, if no matter when you're watching this presentation, right now this week, we're 3 weeks before the end of 2014. And kind of a wrap up, I wanted to sort of do the values we get out of the past, the present, and the future. So I've got 3 weeks to go. I'm going to do one in each one. And this one is actually one of my favorite topics. Even though we get most fired up and we're going to charge out, you know, at the end of the third session on looking at our future, envision, and next week is just the deep emotional touch about being in the present and valuing your present and the people in it. You know, this one has got to do with realizing you have gold in your backyard and you've totally ignored it. You haven't been aware of it. And so for those of you who are new to Dream Connections, we get new guys every time. We're actually a group of married guys who are trying to help other people find their spouse in other countries. So people believe, you know, you just feel in your heart that you met another couple. For some reason, you believe your wife could be in Ukraine or she could be in Colombia. We do everything in our power to educate, train, and facilitate that. So not only do we screen the ladies over there, we want to make sure the guys going are marriage-minded and fun to hang out with. I got to hang out with you for a week. And so we've been very successful with that. And because we bring good guys, you know, the real ladies who aren't involved in the online dating industry, you know, come out and they trust and they test us. And we develop a reputation that way. So you figure, how does this personal development stuff fit into it? It totally fits into it. Because two reasons. One, because if you're looking for the woman of your dreams, I want to make you the man of her dreams. And don't you want to be? Why wouldn't you want to be, right? And so sometimes some personal reflection is great, and sometimes stopping for a moment to let somebody ask you questions you wouldn't normally ask yourself is just, it's great, because there's no other moment in the work week or interaction with guys and hanging out with friends that people don't stop you and go, hey, let's make this really rich and really huge. And so we do that here. We do personal development, and think of it. And the second reason we do this kind of personal development stuff is because, you know, the saddest thing in the world is you hear the stories about the lottery winners, right? The guy wins, you know, $10 million and he blows it two years later and he's back to his day job, you know. And it's like the saddest thing is if you actually find this incredible prize woman and you haven't done the work to be ready to receive it, you'll still be carrying your baggage. You'll be dealing with questions. You'll be doubting things. You'll be causing your own problems. And what I want to do is create this great place where you can totally, freely, emotionally enjoy this relationship you're going to be in with the woman who has the value system you're looking for, and she's attractive and really, you know, puts your relationship as a priority. So it's about cleaning your slate, getting you ready to just be free, to really enjoy this future that's coming to you without any baggage, without any bitterness, without anything else in the past. So this is a gift to you. Nobody else does this work we do here. But not only do we want to help you introduce you to her, we want you to be able to enjoy it to the max. Make sense? Okay, here we go. This talk is on, like I said, we're going to do the three different talks in this little three-part series here on the past, the present, and the future. So dealing with the past, I really am not big on a lot of those failure books. It just because the whole concept, I avoid it. I just don't want to deal with it. You know, like John Maxwell, who I'm a big fan of, met him personally on a couple of occasions, and really big fan of John Maxwell's teaching. Out of the 20, 30 books he's written, one of them was called Failing Forward. It's how to, you know, fail and learn from those lessons. But just the fact that the word fail was in the topic made me not want to read it. And I love everything else he does. So, but a couple of the books I read that I'm going to reference tonight have more of this concept that I really value. It's leveraging your personal past. And here's the catchphrase. So really catch this, because this will capture where we're going to go tonight. It's cashing in on the value of your experiences and the investments you've made in yourself. And a lot of times I'm going to tell you, we're going to get through the night and you're going to realize that there aren't many times we actually stop to realize what value we've put into our life through our training, through, you know, the personal development courses we've been through, coming here every Tuesday night. You guys, a year with me, you guys are at a whole new level in life. And it's just because you took the time to stop and evaluate and assess. It's not as much my magic, you know, but as the fact that you made that investment yourself. And so here's where we now take that and we leverage that for this great future. So we're going to dive into this material with a lot of excitement here and pride. First of all, I want to tell you this. Here's a quote I came up with today. So I have, if you guys don't know, on my new phone, I have this new app that does quotes. I save quotes and I give them attributed to people. So I came up with this quote today, and I really like it. I don't know anybody said it quite like this, so I gave myself credit for saying it because I've never heard it said before. But I want to go through this slow, and I want you to absorb this because you need to value yourself. So here we go. Many experiences come with a price. And, you know, you should expect to get something for your purchase. You paid for that. It could have been painful. It could have been a self-sacrifice. But many experiences come with a price. But you know what? Every time you pay for something, you expect to get something for that purchase. No experience is a waste unless you left without your purchase. You kind of get that? Many experiences come with a price, and you should expect to get something for your purchase. But no experience is a waste unless you left without your purchase. You know, other people have said it in ways like, you know, the only value wasted is the one not evaluated or something to that effect. But I really want you to get the tangible, physical feel of the fact that, you know what, if you paid for something, whether it's a success or a defeat, there was a cost to you, whether it's emotional, financial, time, relational, all these different things that go into it, there's a price for everything. Whether the end result was good or the end result was bad, there's something solid, a gold nugget that you can pull out of the middle of it. You paid for that, and I want you to value that. So none of that is wasted, you know, unless you leave that scene without that purchase. There was a basketball player who was being interviewed, and you know, he was saying, how do you get on to the next game when you just had a big failure on this game? And, you know, he says, well, you play and then you forget. And this is one of the John Maxwell things. Is, well, that's great to do and forget. But he says, if you don't take a moment to figure out what the lesson is learned out of that failure or that loss or the win, you know, then you've lost the value of it. So everything you do has such value. And tonight you're going to come away feeling that way. And that's why I'm excited about this. So tonight, the great wisdom of Mark Davis is just going to come from delivering you some nuggets I got out of these three books. So the three books we're going to talk about tonight are The Dream Giver from Bruce Wilkinson, Epic from John Eldridge, and Halftime from Bob Buford. And these are going to be, you know, just the snippets of the, you know, each of these, but sort of the nuggets, I think, that are the good takeaways for us in this topic tonight. The first book, The Dream Giver by Bruce Wilkinson. Bruce Wilkinson is the one that wrote that that little pocket book called The Prayer of Jabez. It sold like 40 million copies of this, just this little booklet he did that had these great thoughts. It took a little biblical truth. He's a pastor. In fact, he's a friend of the family. I mean, I haven't told many people this, but we grew up when he first started. He went from being a pastor, and then he started doing these regional seminars. He'd do a weekend at churches and teach people, you know, how to study their Bible and other things, and did it in a very entertaining way. He kind of became sort of a Tony Robbins for this, you know, church segment, and then it grew into being this author. And he's a really cool guy, very creative, very imaginative. That's why I kind of relate to him. And I want to tell you a little bit about, I don't have an outline for this, I just want to tell you the story, because The Dream Giver is a story. It's a parable. It's kind of one of those where if you've done Og Mandino books, you know, those kind of things where he'll tell a story from an ancient scrolls, these kind of things. Well, this is a parable where, and they use names for all the characters that represent parts of the journey. So it's one of those kind of stories. And in the story, it's a man who had a glimpse of something, and he felt, you know, what he's looking for was in that. He saw a traveler coming to town, and it had these things. He told stories, and in him, it began to well up, and he was just going to go insane if he didn't go try to find it for himself. And he had this vision of what his dream would be. And so it's the story of him going through the desert and having friends from back in his town coming out and trying to convince him to come back home, that he should give up on his dream, and you know, it's not worth it, and we all miss you back here in our mediocrity, you know, in this mediocre town, and all these kind of things. And so the symbolism is so great, because you realize the encouragement of the fact that somebody who has any ambition in their heart at all, you know, even if you're part of a company that's going somewhere, you want to advance in the ranks, you want to become, you know, an achiever in your department, you want to, you know, break out, heaven forbid, and start your own business or your own practice of whatever you do, and there's always going to be those who want to bring you back in, and it talks about the struggle and the difficulty, but there's neat moments where at the right times, there's sort of a little messenger of encouragement that comes along to say the right thing at the right time, and to give the inspiration and the hope to keep going on. Now, the great part of this book, and I'm going to give it away, so because I want the lessons to come out of this. So I hope you still go get the book, because there's a lot of good things in it. But at the end, what do they call this in movies when you give away the plot? So here we go. I'm going to give away the plot. At the end, he ends up going and finding this incredible the little town he finally gets to, and he's just stopping there briefly because he's on his way to find his city. You know, the one with his name on it. He believes there's a city that's going to have his name on the gate, and he's looking for that. So he stops out to help this little town because they're being bombarded by giants. And so he creates these defenses and comes to town, and the people of the town love him. And, you know, he ends up spending a season there, but he feels restless. But I'm not done. My journey's out there. I'm still not done. And the great moment is this huge revelation. As he gets to the gate to leave to go find his town, he looks up, and his name is on the gate of the town he just stopped in to try to help defend them against the giants. And I love that, because this has been my story. You know, when I started Dream Connections, I just wrote a book, and I wanted to try to help more guys win. And when we started doing, even we started doing tours, it wasn't thought of as a business thing. It was going to be something for, you know, Rick was going to do a documentary review for him, and then, you know, it just kind of grew, and we ended up with this thing that we kept doing out of love. But it wasn't, you know, we weren't making money on it for the first year and a half. We just kept doing it while I'm trying to go build my other business. So I was out trying to get into the movie industry, and I was networking, and I was doing regular meetings and trying to do all this stuff. And it's the same as my story. The movie thing didn't pan out, but this little thing we were doing just out of love just turned out. And we defeated giants for people and helped them find a home. And so to me, I love this book because it's my story. But I think it's so many guys' stories. Otherwise, he wouldn't have written the book and it wouldn't have done so well. I think it's just a great inspirational thing to realize that the real thing you will find is just while you're in the journey, while you're struggling because in your heart you know something is there, you have to pay attention to what's being blessed and focus on that. See what's bearing fruit. See what's creating great momentum. And it may surprise you where it comes from. So I love the wisdom of this little tiny book. And it's like 130 pages or something. It's just a story. But you'll find so many things that are reassuring to your soul that you're not alone, that God will provide help along the way, and you'll see what it looks like when you find your zone of your vision. So, like I said, I didn't have a PowerPoint for that. It's kind of a story. So that's the message on that one, is the fact that, you know, the four elements of that story. One, you're going to have people trying to keep you back. You're going to go through struggle in the desert. You will have people, there will be help come to you to encourage you, like-minded people. That's why we created the tribe. You know, you're not alone out there. You've got this brotherhood of all the other people on this call and all the people who hang out with us, the hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, who've chosen to raise their hand and say, I like what these guys are doing. I want to be part of it. You know, you're not alone. We want to create community. We're going to increase what we do to help you guys interact with each other, to help the fellowship to realize you're not alone. And then finally, just to pay attention to what's being blessed in your life, to what is producing good fruit, what is actually being effective, where people are saying, dude, that was awesome. What you're doing right there was fantastic. And then following that, and you'll find it to be the rewarding thing, and it may not be where you thought it was going to be. That's the message from book one. Book two is epic. Now, epic, I actually heard the audio version of this. I listened to an audio of the author, John Eldridge, actually tell the story of epic in a presentation. So I heard him talk for an hour and a half and kind of explain what was behind this and his heart in it. John Eldridge is the one who also wrote, I mentioned this in my book, Wild at Heart. Wild at Heart is the discovering the secret of a man's soul. And I quote it and reference it in my own book because I do some men's study stuff in there. The purpose and point of this one is, again, perspective. And this is what I love about what we're doing here tonight. We're on the topic of the past, how to take what you've done and leverage it and realize the value that's come from everything you're doing, and to give it perspective. And that's what he wants to do. His whole thing is about perspective. And here's the basic concept. And this one I can just tell very short. And if you get this one, you get the essence of it. Think of your favorite movies, the great movies that you love. You know, and to me, a recent one that I've just gone nuts over, I watched repeatedly is this one called Edge of Tomorrow. You probably saw the Tom Cruise thing. It says live, die, repeat. And it's an alien battle movie, and he's kind of stuck in this thing. And it's the story of just the regular guy who goes out there and is thrown into this thing he can't get out of. But then all of a sudden, because he can't get out of it, he says, all right, then, well, the heck, if I can't get out of this, then let's fight and let's make this thing win. And he goes on to save the day. And in the process, he has to deal with this sergeant that keeps belittling him and trashing him and incompetence all around him. People want to arrest him, and nobody believes his story, and so he's treated as insane. And there's elements of betrayal, of sabotage, of all these kind of things, and yet he has to fight through it. At the end of the day, the whole thing, he wins, you know, saves the universe and all the rest of the stuff that goes into it, wins the girl. And basically what the essence of this book is he says the reason we like stories like that is because God has impressed it on our heart. There's something in us that we love those stories. Why do we love those stories? Because that's going to be your story. And if you think about it in this framework, there are going to be parts of your life where you're going to have betrayal. You're going to have setback. You're going to have people that, you know, want to sabotage you or kick you while you're down and discourage you. And there are parts where you're just going to feel like, I'm not up to this. I'm just a regular guy. And this is one of the messages on John Eldridge's other book, is that the psychic wound for the man is that we're just regular guys. We're not up for the challenge. And I hope nobody discovers that I'm not going to be competent at the time when I'm really tested. And this fear we have. And yet that's the beauty of epic. The beauty of epic stories is it's always just the average guy who gets thrown in and has to then rise up and save the day because he has to. And I love the story when Bruce Willis captured this in the Die Hard series. You know, in the first one, you know, he's just the cop there and he just happens to be there and has to step up, you know, against these European terrorists. And then in the fourth movie, to me, it was so profound. Where they're in the car, he's there with the kid, and the kid's talking to him, and he goes, you're some kind of hero, huh? He goes, I'm not a hero, kid. And he goes, what are you talking about? You know, you do this for these people? And you go, look, you know, somebody had to do it, and I was there. And so I guess I was the guy. And so the story comes around at the end where the kid ends up having to do the same. And he says, somebody had to do it, and today you were the guy. And we love that piece of it. So if you can understand the struggle and the challenge, everything in, it's common. It's almost like God has laced this idea into your soul, into your psyche, for you to understand that this is kind of what your life narrative is going to look like. But it's a story we love. We love this. We love watching movies like this. Then all of a sudden the thought that you're going to be thrown in the middle of it, well, God is telling you, it is your story. You are in the middle of it. You are just a regular guy who's going to have all these things. But in the end, if you persevere, listen to your heart, see where you're supposed to do in the scope of the world, follow your path, you're going to come out the other end and people are going to salute you. And you're going to find your moment of where the regular guy makes the day. And so to me, I love this correlation. I just can't tell you how exciting it is to come away realizing that there's a psychological reason why all of us men love these kind of movies, and it's because God knows you're in one. So embrace it. You're a regular guy, but you know what? Somebody had to step up, and so for today, you're the guy. You were just there. You did what you had to do. You're the guy. Okay? You can tell I love this kind of stuff, so, you know. Here's the next one I want to talk about now, halftime. Halftime, I want to tell you about because this had a very significant impact in my life at the right time when I needed it. So I'm going to share some very personal stuff here, but it's not anything I haven't shared before. But I'm putting into one package because I want to help you really frame out a strategy for that present and future that we're going to talk about coming up ahead. In his book, Halftime, by Bob Buford, is subtitled, Moving from Success to Significance. He tells some of his own story, and so I want to get into this outline and what this all means. But first of all, obviously, it is a reference to football, or it could be soccer for those guys of you in Europe. You know, if you like football, there's a halftime. So there's a first half, a second half, but there's always a halftime. And what happens in halftime in these sports games, you evaluate what went on in the first half, and then you try to readjust your game plan to win in the second half. So if you can just get that framework, it's huge for you. And we're going to talk about that right now, that you are either in first half, halftime, or second half, and at any time in your life, you can choose to have that halftime break. And I'm going to talk about this. First half is about your career. It's about creating success, figuring out what you're doing. It's internal. It's about I need to develop skills. I need to figure out my place in this world. I need to create worth in the marketplace. I need to grow socially so I can enjoy networks of friends. It's internally focused. The halftime is about reflection. It's about assessment, and then it's about planning. And then, of course, your second half is about living your mission. It's about execution. It's about reward. It's about significance. All right? So let's talk about it. And again, this mirrors a pattern my dad told me. So I'm going to tell you what my dad told me first. I'm going to get into this outline. My dad told me one time that he says, typically, the life path you look on personal development for yourself, he goes, your 20s is about you trying to find your place in the world. It's just about you going to college. It's your first jobs. It's developing that place where it's like, I'm finding my place in the world. Out of all the things I've tested and tried, and he says, I recommend in your 20s you try different things to see what you're really good at and not just get stuck in the one job you happen to be working at summer in college and then it's your life the rest of your life. No, it's like what you'll find in different ways. You know, I started off as a production job, and my first sales job I just took off and found, wow, I got a propensity here. You know, well, you guys will all go, well, duh, you know. But it's like I didn't. I was working inside a dark room at a print house with sheets of film for a printing company that was doing brochures and all the rest of the stuff printing companies do. I was literally the dark room guy at 22 years old processing film. You know, and you're going like, what a misfit for you, Mark. Well, okay, but, you know, I tried different things, and then, you know, I found my niche. And then once you find where you're succeeding and you're winning, then you really want to develop some expertise there. So your 20s is about that. It's your personal development. It's your growth, discovery. What can I do well? And you make tons of mistakes. I mean, I made some when I was a freshman in college. I was my flamboyant personality, I guess, came out, and they had me be the spokesman student for the university when they'd go to fundraisers. And the biggest one of all, I mean, it was 1,000 people in there. Each of them paid like $1,000 to be there. It was the biggest fundraiser. And they wanted me to be up there and speak. And I had this profound opening line, and it was so good, but I really didn't plan the rest of it, so I ad-libbed. And I was horrified later. It haunted me for years, the horrification of this moment I had in front of all these significant people that, you know, I floundered and just got off the stage. And, you know, the next day even my English teacher says, wow, yeah, that was something, Mark. And it haunted me. You know, so I had to learn how to deal with that, and we'll talk about some of that. Your 30s is now going from efficiency to excellence. It's like, okay, I know what I do now. We are going to leverage this puppy. We're going to make it work. You build the business. You do the thing. You're making cash. You know, now maybe you even bought an RV. You got your house. You know, typically, you know, you got your wife. You start your kids. You're getting acknowledged for excellence in your industry. And I'll tell you this. I really believe that most of our modern Western cultures are really built on the back of the 25 to 35 year olds. It's the zone of your highest creativity, your highest energy level, and they're just so productive. I mean, music comes out of this group, of this age group, 25 to 35. You know, the brain children, you look at whether it was the Steve Jobs or the Bill Gates, all these guys, you know, they hit their stride in this zone. And now at my age, I'm looking at, I want to hire guys that are 25 to 35. And so if you're in that zone, you know, realize this is a unique period of time for creation, for producing, for being able to work tirelessly and kick butt. And you're going to get pats on the back and acknowledgments for that. And so that's all for your first half. And then, but again, breaking down the first half is it's going to be more internally focused because, you know, these are all new experiences for you. You've never had a career before, and then you've never had a promotion before, and then you've never had to buy stuff before and manage taxes, you've never had to deal with accolades or acknowledgments, you've never had to deal with marital conflicts and failure, relationships, you never had to deal with kids, so this is all new. So you're constantly scrambling to keep up with life, to figure out, how does this all fit, what am I supposed to do now? And it's a treadmill. And God bless you that you're in that zone where you've got the energy to keep up with it, you know, because that's what God gave it to you for. You're just about the internal focus of, look, I got to get what I need. I got to feed my family. I've got to take care of this. I got to take care of that. It's internal in all of its things. Less reflection on those around you than even you would really like. You kind of know that, yeah, I should probably be doing something to give to my community or do something, but I just can't. You know, that's kind of where you are in your first half. Now, there's something I call the two-minute warning, and I don't even know if this is in the book. I call it this because that's kind of what I feel. There comes this moment when you're feeling a sense of collapse because you've been scrambling now for a long time to take care of other people, to keep up with things. When accolades come, you feel like, well, I need to meet the challenge of the career when the boss tells me, man, I need you to now do this, and now you're doing that. And because you do that, you didn't take care of your body. You didn't take care of your marriage, and something gives. You know, the career plateaus and it's no longer satisfying anymore, but you can't identify why. You know, the relationships are now bickering and they're not fun. And you found yourself doing for others and really not caring, you know, for yourself because you never sat down to listen to yourself. You don't even know what it's like to think a thought about, what do I really want in this life? You've just been on the treadmill. This is when guys refer to that treadmill cycle. And the stress that comes with it, and this is where you get guys by late 30s and early 40s when the physical chemistry in the body now starts shifting where less testosterone and this stuff, they start gaining weight, and it's because they're feeding themselves, you know, to cover the stress or they're using alcohol or other things like this because you've gone to a place past your own personal capacity without knowing it because you haven't evaluated, you haven't had a mentor come along and sort of guide you to create balance in your life. And, you know, hopefully we do this here. This is why I love our average age guy here is 38. We get a lot of 20-somethings, a lot of early 30-something guys. And I consider it a ministry to you guys. I want to help you find balance. And you know, I'm telling you, those of us guys, now I've crossed the 50, you know, the half century mark. And now I'm at a place where, you know, I have a little bit more. I can focus and think about all these different kind of things. I've been through what I'm about to teach you, I guess is what I'm saying. But all of us at this stage of our life, we look at you guys in your 20s and your early 30s and something, we're going like, you know, God bless it. If I had discovered, you know, Dream Connections and all these things back when I was that, I, you know, that we envy you in a healthy way. We love you for it. We are so happy you're discovering this now. You have no idea the heartache you're going to save yourself. And not only that, a separate talk we're going to do down the road is with the married guys to talk about, do you know how much having this woman who supports me has helped me find out what I'm here for and given me fuel, jet rocket fuel, to go accomplish the things I'm really here to do and the significance I've found because of this woman who supports me in my agenda? So for you guys who are young, we love you. God bless you. We all wish we had been as smart as you are to have found this at this stage in your life. And the next part of the this two-minute warning before you get to halftime is your train wreck. And everybody's going to have it. You're going to have it. It's part of your epic. It's whether you had somebody very close to you die and it just shook your world. You had a divorce. And sometimes the divorces are so bitter, vindictive, biting, and they tear you up. And sometimes they take years to finish, even the attorneys get involved to finish the divorce process. Your career completely collapses. You've had something you've done all your life, and all of a sudden, it's just gone. And sometimes it's not just the company you work for went bankrupt, or you got fired after a period of time, or laid off, or whatever the term is. It's the thing you were doing just doesn't exist anymore. The world has shifted and went on to something else, and you're absolutely at a place of devastation. And I'll never forget mine when I've always had a different mindset in dealing with it, so I wasn't really depressed by this. But I remember after leaving my first marriage, I you know, one of these nice guy things, I'll let her have everything. And so I moved up to a one-bedroom apartment in a city an hour and a half away. And I literally took nothing. I had to go to Walmart to get a sleeping bag, have something to sleep in the first night. And it was like 2 weeks later, my parents came down to do Thanksgiving, and I'm going, I got nothing. So I took my guitar amp, and I laid it on its side, and I put a grease marker board on top of it. That was our table. We sat on the floor. They had to bring all the cooking utensils to cook the dinner. We had a picture of us sitting there with my little kids around this thing. But you know what? We laughed. It's like we always had a better, you know, attitude about all these transitions in life. To, you know, God bless my dad for instilling some of that optimism into me. But there's a point where you're leading up to this halftime where it's like life almost forces you to have to stop. And we never want to stop. You know, we're driven people. For us to have to take the time to do introspection, for us to do anything like this, it's almost like we don't want to have to stop and think. And I know it even sounds counterproductive to say that. You know, we all know we should have this. You know, this is why, you know, a lot of, you know, Christians at least, you know, try to find that peace in their life by spending, a 5 or 10 minutes, 15 minutes in the morning, just to read a little wisdom out of the Bible and say and ask God, you know, and part of that is just getting out of your own head. And whether you use meditation or other forms of that, taking a pause to quiet down and to reflect. John Maxwell said one of his nightly rituals was every night he would get in a hot tub and he'd ask himself, you know, 4 questions. He says, did I focus on the big picture today? Did I learn something new? And he always was keeping quotes. You know, did I contribute to somebody today? His term is add value. Did I add value to somebody else today? And, you know, and then I think it's something he had to do with one of his other specific goals, write in a book or something. But, you know, to have that time of reflection will become part of your life going forward after your halftime because you realize the value in that. It's a thing when, if you guys remember the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the 7th habit is called sharpening the saw. It's like all the things you do in the life, but sometimes you have to stop. It's like the tree cutter. You know, if he just kept cutting, you know, eventually that saw gets dull and then he's just not effective anymore. You got to stop sometimes and sharpen the saw so you're more effective again. And that'll become part of it. But anyway, this 2-minute warning, you're at a collapse. And so whether you willingly choose to do this or not, you know, this stuff comes. So I want to tell you my story. When I'm coming to my 2-minute warning, I'm at the end of my first half. I had experienced my first really big entrepreneurial success. I finally was earning 6 figures. I had a leasing company that had now grown to represent 10% of this publicly held company's income. I had regard and so it was taking off in a way. I was making more money than I had before. But I was sitting here on a second marriage, 4 kids, 2 minivans, and it was very domestic. So all the effort and work I was doing, I always had this self-sacrificing thing. That's why if you've heard my talk on Fresh Starts, you know, the most important question I was ever asked had to do with this whole thing. I wasn't evaluating very well. And I was doing everything for others and the self-sacrificing thing. And so even though I had career success, I wasn't doing anything to nourish me and figure out what I wanted out of it. And so I felt trapped in a no-fun cycle, completely trapped. And it was very depressing. I emotionally felt like I've worked for 22 years for everyone else's agenda, and what have I got, to show for it? And from that, I really went into, you know, if you heard my talk on relationships, I tried negotiating with my spouse at the time, you know, but she didn't understand what I was going through. And I ended up just going through an 8-month-long depression. And I learned what depression was. I thought it was crap because I'm this optimistic person. I thought, you can work it through. No, it was a very serious thing. What happens in a depression in this type that's from mental fatigue is you have denied your heart what you really want for so many years that it catches up with you and you end up living a sort of a death inside because what it is the dreams you had as a young person, as a child, of where you could be, what you could do, you realize you haven't got them. You've done all this and nothing's there. And so it's the death of a dream, really. And since you don't know which is the way out and you feel trapped, it's a helplessness that is very hard to describe. And I remember going to a pastor, the same pastor I talk about in that Fresh Starts. By the way, if you want to do that, let me give you a couple links on our website. If you go dreamconnections.com/ Fresh-Starts. You'll hear a lot of this good stuff in there that I'm talking about. I went to my friend, Pastor Mike Phillips, and he recognized it immediately. And he goes, Mark, you owe this to your mind to let it mourn. You have denied yourself, and you've just done everything. And you have to let this poison come out of your system. You have to let it go through the grieving process like any other death. And so he says, the one thing, it's hard to tell you to do this, and this is what he told me. And again, I'm not counseling you guys on how to handle your own situations. You need to find your own counsel for that, unless you're sitting with me, and I'd be glad to talk to you. But in my case, what he advised me to do was, he says, the hard part is when you feel the pain and hurt, you have to acknowledge it and consider it part of your grieving process and just let it flow out. Let it just have its day. Let it just have its way. And it's agony to sit in that and let it happen. Most people don't. What they try to do is urgently escape it. And they try to escape it with artificial things, you know, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or they try to hype themselves up, you know, with, you know, you see the guys who go into the midlife crisis, you know, they're going to hype themselves up with overstimulation of crazy things so they don't have to think about it. And so that's where I was. I'm telling you guys, I've seen all this. So now, at this moment, while I'm in this eight-month depression, God bless it, I was handed the book Halftime. And it was the greatest gift at that moment to be able to give some perspective to this and have purpose for it. And that's a lot of part of what we do. So what is Halftime? Well, first of all, it is a choice. It's not a default. Most people just keep shuffling through the rut. Some break out into complete rebellion and rage. That's where I talk about if you know, some people, they're not going to stop to evaluate. They're not going to acknowledge this. You had a two-minute warning, and you need to stop. You need to think. You need to take a look at the first segment of your life. You know, for most guys who hit this point, like I said, it's 38 to 45 years old, somewhere in there that they come to this place. And God bless you. If you're a young person, I would say you intentionally create a halftime where you're at to really ramp up to go in a very intentional way. So you don't have to have a halftime. Some guys shuffle their way through it. They ignore the pain. They numb themselves down. They become emotionally locked up, or they just break into rage and become angry at everything around them, or just do become thrill seekers. The midlife crisis is just a result of poor choices. You know, at this point of this two-minute warning, when you've had these, your train wreck, and you're dealing with these things at this, you know, place in your life, you're not where you thought you'd be, you're dealing with the death of a dream and all these things. Sometimes, you know, the guys will respond out of revenge. They're angry because now they blame all of this stuff on the ex-wife. And so they're just furious and they want to get revenge on her. They have no regard for anybody around them. They become very narcissistic. It's all about feeding my ego, about materialism, about thrill seeking, and the complete self-indulgence just ends in loneliness. It doesn't fix it. It becomes this band-aid to where you kind of get through the emotional ache and you ignore it as much as possible, then you get to this place where you just cruise at a different level and you get by, but it's not the same significance that you can have if you really take the intentional time to do this. Deciding to have a halftime is totally wise. It's totally wise. It's a profound choice to pause the action. And like I said, you can do this anytime you want. It can be, you know, I know Pastor Mike Phillips, same guy I'm talking about, every year takes off the week from Christmas to New Year, takes himself to a cabin just to completely reflect on the past year and plan the next year. It's the emotional equivalent of exhaling before you inhale again and going. You read, you assess, you spend time with friends in reflection and journal. This is where I've always said it's so important to have friends, guy friends, men friends. It's, to me, I would say it's almost more important than even finding your spouse, to have good buddies that you can interact with life and process things. And it's my buddy Steve Marks would say, to unpackage. He would say, I would say, he says, what's going on, Mark? Ah, this just happened. He says, you know, let's get together and unpackage that. You know, and to have somebody who would do that and to just talk about it. We would do it over, you know, cigar and a couple shots of brandy and just to talk about it. And we don't rush to conclusions. You let them come. You've had a lot of years building up, waiting for this time to then evaluate where you are, what you're good at, what you've done. And you need to give full emotional healing to this process. Because There's going to be things, even if it was crazy, even if as a kid for some reason you thought you were going to be an astronaut, you never became an astronaut, there's a part of your subconscious that doesn't know the difference. It was emotionally connected to that, and it didn't happen. So there may be a part of you going, ah, didn't happen. Okay, well, let that death of a dream go on and deal with it. Say, okay, sucked. What have I got now? You know, and then focus on the next thing. But don't ignore, you know, any emotional healing that needs to happen. So creating a game plan for your second class, you know, class comes from, you come off the first half, if you're beaten up a little bit, you're bandaged, well, you go to the doc and he's going to wrap your knee up, give you a little shot of whatever, and you know, get you ready for the second half. So you do some healing, do some reflection on what happened in the first half. Don't give into a feeling of panic to do something just to avoid emotions. They're your emotions. It's okay. You've been neglecting them for years. By letting them come, you will get through the stuff you've been stuffing, and you will come out so alive you cannot imagine. You come out of there with more power and energy than, you know, a testosterone-strapped 18-year-old in a football game. You will just come out full of life and energy, you know, when you do this. You know, provided with the proper reflection assessment that goes with that, with somebody to help you process it and all these kind of things. Make a complete list of your successes. Okay, so now we're going to get to, let's be constructive now. You know, okay, we got beat up in the first half, do a little bit of healing. Okay, now let's stop and think. What have I learned over this time? I mean, I've done some investment here. What's some personal and career accomplishments? You know, things that you've come up. And I put this quote in there because most often we only see the failures of our past. This is why personal monuments are necessary. This is so, so true, but this has been true for all time. In almost 6,000 years ago, even at the time of the early nation of Israel, you know, God would give them a commandment when something significant happened. You know, a family should go build a little monument, and they would just literally each go get a big stone, and they'd build a little thing that had 12 stones on it. And they would say, so every time you walk by it, you remember something good that happened to your family. Why? Because we need reminders that good things have happened. We don't need reminders about bad things. They come and they bug us, and we give them too much value and too much weight. And so there are almost things in life where you have to have, like, for instance, for me, I'm not scripting this, but I have this around me now. This dagger is of significance to me, huge significance to me. I actually have this dagger in full size, 18 inches long, tattooed down the side of my body like it was sheathed down my hip. And to me, the strength of what this represents, going through the moment of challenge, the most difficult period of my life, and having Steve Marks there with me, and the symbolism we had, my nickname, because we ended up, one of our controlled expressions to get out of just being totally domestic is we both got motorcycles and got our motorcycle license. We decided to give each other biker names. So I was Dagger. And so this dagger represents a huge part of my life. Mostly I think about it with Steve. And that period of time when I had to deal with so many things, and the emergence of that was my traveling overseas to find my wife. I'm sitting here and I've got a shot glass from Ukraine, and I usually also have my pipes over here, but the shot glass does the same memorial. And it reminds me of my trips over there to lead the first quest tours, the adventure that represented, and hanging around at the porch and just enjoying a shot with some guys. I have another one here that represents my third year anniversary with my wife in Hawaii. That was an amazing special trip. So these things, you're like, well, what does that mean to you? Well, it means something to me. And so it reminds me of these incredibly great things. And of course, I picked this up. This is my new shot glass. It says Medellin, Colombia on it. And I keep these here on my desk. I want to show you a couple other things that I have now that I'm just, you know, I didn't script this, honestly. I'm realizing now how much this has become a part of my life, because we all have to be reminded of the good things. My wife gave this to me right here. It says, love you. It's a rock shaped like a heart. And so she goes, you know, sometimes my heart may be hard as cold, but it's your heart. She says, I want you to have it. So she gave me her heart. And that was always there. I have here in front of me on my little stand continually, this is under my computer now, the symbolism of what this medallion coin means to me is it sits right underneath my monitor here. And there's not a moment I'm not working when I'm not reminded of what this means to have been a man of action, that I was part of the 3% club that went and took action to go overseas, you know, that I am now, as the slogan says, living the dream. And, you know, the symbolism means to me, you know, somebody else, these things aren't going to mean anything to, but what it means to me is, you know, is quite profound. I realize that I'm just living proof of what I'm telling you. It's important for you to have monuments, to have things to remind you of these times in your life, the accomplishments you had, things that are personal to you and you only. And next thing is make a list of all your skills and talents. Now, separate from your successes, now let's actually look at what weapons you have. What have you become good at? And like John Maxwell says, there's probably only about four things you're really good at, where it's like, you got to think about your personal talents. Your personal talents are something you have to look at where, like I said, you found a place where other people are acknowledging you and saying, you're good at that. Wow, that was awesome. And so he says, for example, you know, he says, as a singer, out of a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 3. He says, you don't want to hear me sing. And he says, I could go and take classes, and I could go and have professionals try to help me, and I could go from a 3 to a 5, you know, out of 10. But nobody pays for level 5 skills. You have to look at the things where right now you're already a 7, 8, or a 9, and those, you just ramp those up so you can become that thing that just makes you stand out in that place in your life. And so that's what you're looking at. So separate from the things you've had as accomplishments, you want to create memorials to remember that, to create that, you know, that moment of struggle where am I getting, you know, can I do this? This is a new arena for me. Am I going to be up for the challenge? You have this support around you. It's sort of like this league of memories that reinforce the fact, you know, that these are there behind you. Now it's okay, what are my skill sets? What have I developed that I'm really good at? For me, these presentations. I can do a PowerPoint and an outline and deliver a 1-hour talk better than anybody I know. And I can do business writing very well. I really enjoy being with groups of guys and getting people just excited about being together. To me, the momentum and the excitement, the energy of getting like-minded people together. So I focus on that, you know, creative thoughts, you know, and so, but there's things I'm not good at. And so that's where I have other people, my wife, you know, accountants, Jeff Kelly, attorneys, other people that kind of balance me out in other areas, and I don't pretend to be good in those. Now, I want to talk about, and here we go. The last, what, I added a point. Oh, yeah, this is great. Just make a list of things that have brought exuberance and joy, things that just rocked your world, whether it was, you know, skiing, an adventure trip, racing cars, people in your life. What has totally lit your boat? Because you're going to want to insert those in your game plan and make sure you're always doing something that lights your world on fire. Like for me, the first thing that lit my world on fire was I went out and got a convertible. And I just, because I'd never done anything for myself, I'd always been driving minivans. And I love this little Mercedes, and it was every day getting in. It was this reminder of joy, of energy, of something exciting. And then to do some travel. I hadn't been out of the country in 22 years, you know what I'm saying? Maybe 24 years. And so accepting an invitation to go on this fishing trip to Brazil was nerve-wracking to me, and not to mention it was the Amazon, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it changed my life. So that's the other thing to insert there is making sure you're always making time for things just for you, just light your world on fire. Okay, reflecting, asking intelligent questions with zero-based thinking. What do I love to do personally where I really excel, I could charge money, and improve the lives of others? Dude, would that just not be a great question to spend an afternoon on? And do it with a buddy. Both of you get together and say, okay, you go first, and then I'll go. Ask this question. What do I love to do personally where I really do excel, that I could charge money for it, and I can improve the lives of others? Man, just meditate on that. Go for that for a while and just, boom, get a sheet of paper going. And then find out what skill sets am I going to have to learn to really fill in a gap if I need to learn how to charge money for that. Talk to others who have, others who have learned to improve other people's lives with these skill sets. Find other people, get your, you know, make your list of, okay, now how do I execute that? Do not decide to start over like an 18-year-old freshman in college. And I want to say this because the author of the book, Halftime, said, you know, his family was in the, they ran a cable company, little cable TV. They had like whatever 80 stations, and they served a community. They were the cable provider, and they were very wealthy and had all these things going for them. And he thought maybe in this new revelation of his second half, he could change the world by becoming a pastor. And he had a, you know, friends, what are you talking about? You're going to go back to school with 18-year-olds and try to learn to be a minister, a pastoral student? You're going to go, you're going to throw away everything that, that you've learned in all these years about being a successful leader of, you know, a multi-million dollar cable industry company with all the networks you have? It discounts the value of what you've already been given. And so that's where you assess, who have I met? What are my networks? What, you know, what have I already got bringing to the table that I could bring into this second half and just take to the next level? And then ask others, ask how you could touch others and leave a legacy. And I'm not going to go in deep on that right now, but you understand the significance of that. What can you do to leave a legacy? Now, final review before you get out there on the game field for halftime is pass your plan by others. Get some wise counsel, trusted friends, similar professionals, whatever it takes for you to take and say, okay, you know what, here's, you know, can you just give me an afternoon? Because it's going to take some time with some people to really go through this, but it's worth it. And you're going to find friends who love you, who will make the time. Maybe you go fishing. Maybe you go on a ski trip or something where, you know, you're not going anywhere. You got the whole nights ahead of you. You can sit there for 4 or 5 hours and unpackage all of these things you've been learning and getting ready to really launch this next part of your life. Invest and be willing to make mistakes, you know, because you have to trust your instincts a little bit. You have developed enough skills that you'll recover, you'll respond, you'll make wiser choices, but you can't steer a parked car. It has to be in motion, and it's going to take gas. And you have to buy the car or at least rent it. And so there's aspects of what's it going to cost me, and just be in motion. Do it real, do it practically. I'm not saying, you know, go bankrupt over this stuff. At this point in your life, you should have enough to be able to, you know, to figure out what all this is going to look like for you. And it's probably going to be seen the same sweet spot where you found high impact and high reward. And that's really what you're looking for. So it's not something where you're going out of your realm. You're not leaving things you've done. You're actually taking what you've done and learn that sweet spot of where you have high impact and high personal reward and financial reward for what you're doing. So here's the adjustments you make. So, okay, we're done with halftime. The adjustments in the first half, it's all internal. You're very defensive because you're insecure. This is all new. You don't know what to believe. You're putting out fires all the time because you're creating half of them. And that's the only way you learn. It's the way new kids do. You have this individual competitiveness. You're feeling very defensive and competitive against everybody around you, as if there's this ongoing leaderboard somewhere. You use a positional leadership. The only time you exert leadership is because you say, well, because I'm the boss. And it's one of the lowest forms of leadership. You're all about independence. You're this island of trying to build up your global, you know, thing to protect and surround your ego, really. Judgmental and superior attitudes of like, hey, I got this. No, look, trust me, I've got. And part of that again is that it's protectiveness around an insecurity, being willing to listen to other people's ideas. You know, they might threaten you. What if they had something better? How would that make me look? It's filled with that because it's new to you, and this is the way young people are. It's about gaining personal trophies and showing them on the shelf. I love the movie. What about Bob? And it's the psychologist in the opening scene. He wrote this book. He finally got published, and he's all proud of it. And he's counseling somebody. And in the bookshelves behind him, he has loaded every shelf with his book. It's literally like 5 deep, 3 wide, all of them with a blue back spine showing in the letters. And it's this hilarious scene where he's talking to saying, you know what? I think I have something that can help you. It's this book. Let me see. Where can I find it? Where can I find it? Oh, here it is. And we're all just dying hysterically. It was all about, look, I wrote, you know, it's my personal trophy. I wrote a book. I'm published now. You know, and about very temporary rewards, you know. So the second half is now you're becoming integrated with others. You're fascinated with paradoxes. And that's the fun part. It's like, you know, wow, I could do this and have fun. I could do this, but what about this? And it's the questioning process. C.S. Lewis said the highest act of worship is to question. And it's a deep concept. You'd have to read his stuff in it. But the same thing happened with The Road Less Traveled with Scott Peck. He said there the same thing. He said one of the greatest acts of spirituality is to question. And because God's not afraid of your questions. And I think that's the whole thing. you get this place, you're not afraid anymore. You're not afraid for a new idea to come. You're not afraid for you to question your own assumptions and to be, and in fact, you welcome it. You know, all of a sudden now you're welcoming. Please, hey, tell me your thoughts. If this is, you know, if I'm off and you're not reading this proposal, this project, right? You know, now you can take an outside perspective and it makes you look even better because you can take more in. You're living out your own beliefs now because you finally had a time to sit down and think about what they are. You know, you're charting your own course now instead of just going down the corporate path or the, you know, the domestic path or whatever. You're realizing what you're supposed to do here. You're a team player. You are a servant example leader, and where you love to be part of this team and you show them by example, you get people excited together. You're interconnected with people and not independent. You're very understanding with people. You're very gracious because, you know, you'd had your first half screw-ups. You had to acknowledge them, and you became cool with them. You deflated the energy out of them, and that's a whole other talk, but you guys got to learn that. There's going to be pains and emotions and embarrassments and anger and things are going to happen in your first half. You're going to have to find a way to just let the entire emotional energy just be gone from those past historic events so you just learn the lessons and move forward to be free. And again, one of the talks I'd recommend you go through is under dreamconnections.com/fresh-starts. Then you start thinking about really leaving a legacy. What am I doing that's going to touch others? You know, the impact of the legacy of this is just mind-boggling to me. You know, we've had so many couples now and babies being born. And think about these families that are created, these kids, these generations, grandkids are going to happen because of what we did. It's just, you know, it's mind-boggling. And I could tell you this, even you, your contribution to our family here as a tribe, it's huge. What you do to support and encourage another person. You know, it's like I said before, you know, Jeremy Selmer and Gala, Jeremy gets up there, the two of them tell their story. And because of that, so many people have the courage to go who are now married and all the rest because, and he did that. You know, so all of you have a chance to do that. And then to find that deep satisfaction. So that's what I wanted to share tonight. It's leveraging your personal past to really just have a kick-ass second half and really enjoy every moment of it. Find what you're about and go just free to enjoy the world, free from emotional baggage, just to go, yeah, I love this. And you tear it up and you go travel the world, do what you're supposed to do, make your difference. And the thing that's going to make you most fulfilled, whatever that is, you'll find it because you have value in your experiences. And you've made investments in yourself, including being here tonight. So thanks for being here tonight. Because of it, you will take yourself to another level. I can't change anybody's life. You know, I don't go into your house. I don't mold your mind. You have to be open and saying, I want to learn. And when you learn and receive and get a new thought, it's because you received it and you took action on it and you changed your life. I'm happy to be a tool in that, but it's like any other book on the shelf. The person has to pick it up and read it. And I'm proud of you for being here. What it means to you. You should be proud of yourself saying, I'm the kind of person that invests in myself because I want to have the greatest possible future imaginable and do everything that I'm meant to do here on this earth. So thanks for watching.